Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We are now going to turn the page and consider Yah's testimony. But before we do, I promised there'd be one last comment on the first segment. I thought that Ben Barek's comments regarding the likelihood of a conspiracy were actually quite astute. Now, he's an individual who has not actually studied this, but he came to the conclusion that there are connections that appear undeniable and that those connections are telling, but that he himself does not invest much time talking about it. I think listeners may know that I have studied this. I have read Abe Verrill's book, which is the memoirs on the history of Jacobinism, which detail virtually everything that is known about Adam Weishaupt and his creation of the Order of the Illums. I have read Roberson's Proofs of Conspiracy, which was also written around 1775, 1776. By the way, Thomas Jefferson and George Washington both read both books. And commented on them. As it turns out, George Washington was a very high-ranking Freemason, and Freemasonry was the tool that that Adam Weishaupt ultimately used to convey his jaundiced view of man and God. And Thomas Jefferson was a Jacobin. Very closely allied with the Jacobins, and the Jacobins was the manifestation of Adam Weishaupt's teaching in France that led to the French Revolution, which was the first tangible influence of the Order of the Illums. I've also read Quigley's books, Tragedy and Hope, which presents all of this in a current historical setting, and have read many of Alex Sutton's books detailing the influence of the conspiracy types today. There's even a book called by Epperson called The Unseen Hand, all of which are extraordinarily insightful in coming to know and understand the influence of this original conspiracy. And, you know, I've rub shoulders. I've had in my my home, I've spoken to and had members of the Council on Foreign Relations. I am not a member. I have had members in my home. And I have also had the Illuminists, if you will, try to make me a made man, to try to blackmail me into advancing their agenda. It failed. So I have a reasonable understanding of this. But I came to the conclusion that there was no way to present its history without so much detail that somewhere along the way you just lose everyone. It's an incredibly difficult web to see in the proper perspective and see how all the little pieces work together. It reminds me a lot of paganism. You know, if you look at the Babylonian religion, in fact, even first, second, and third Babylon, and as it migrated into the Assyrian religion, and then how that migrated into the Egyptian religion, and how that migrated into the Greek religion, and then migrated into the Roman religion, the names of the gods and their attributes change. And so if you were to try to say, all right, this is the ultimate head of the pantheon, and he's represented usually by the titles Lord and Baal, and then that migrates over here, and that's this god in Egypt, and it's this god in Greece, and then becomes this god in Rome. Their attributes and their names change to the point that it becomes incredibly muddy to talk about their each of them has a trinity, each of them has the Son of the Son being a dying and resurrecting God. But if you try to actually piece it together and then show how it is manifest in today's religions, particularly in Christianity, the detail is so confusing, and it's so complex, and it changes so often. It's kind of like the conspiracy theories, where the evidence is there, but it's so interwoven and so complicated that to keep one's eyes on the big picture and try to understand its influence, as opposed to reveal each of the facts that are necessary to come to understand it, it's far more effort then there is value in doing so. And that's why I very seldom talk about conspiracy other than in the big picture as to what they're trying to do through political correctness and convincing people they ought not exercise good judgment. And so when Ben made that comment, I think it's actually an astute comment. There's also two other insights here. One is both in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and also in Shimon Kefesh's letter that's is known better as Peter. That's not his actual name, but is Shimon Kefesh's letters. Both places, God and Shimon, who, you know, have a pretty good relationship with God, tell us explicitly not to be conspiracy theorists. And the it's not explained in great detail. The inference is that there are that Yah's message is so vital, and it's so out of context, it's so in out of accord with mainstream thinking. It's so unpopular that if you were to try to advance another theory, conspiracy theory, in addition to promoting Yah's unique message and how out of sync it is with the religion and politics, that by addressing conspiracy theory, you're likely to undermine your credibility and your focus as you attempt to do what is vastly more important, which is to expose and condemn religious and political myths, explain to people why they ought not rely on their government or on their religious faith, and why they ought to turn to the only reliable individual, who is Yahweh, and to the only reliable source, which is his Torah. So that's my conclusion, is that God encouraged us not to go down that path in terms of making our primary argument the making the connections all the way through to understand the influence of these various things. Now, that said, we have Larry has just called in before we go back to the Marsalls and consider Yah's teaching on what is and isn't appropriate for us to focus on. And I know this is the one place where Larry and I do disagree. We agree on most everything. We do not agree on the overall influence of a conspiracy in our daily lives. I think most people bring, and most politicians lie on behalf of themselves and they and their own personal egos and agendas, and that most individuals succumb to beguiling doctrine because they just don't take the initiative themselves to seek out the truth with an open mind. Hello, Larry. Would you like to chime in on that thought? I know that this is the one place where we have a friendly disagreement.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we do and we don't. I mean, first of all, you know, exposing Babylon would mean exposing all aspects of Babylon, and that would be the political realm as well. And these people are every bit as evil, in my view, as say some guy that runs a mega church and lines his pockets and tells people that they're seeding faith when he knows damn well that he's robbing them. Okay, so I mean, and I also think that things are not as black and white. Just because there are people that work with Islamists, and it's pretty clear we do work with Islamists because we fund them. Right. And if we're funding them, we're working with them. And CIA has worked with Al-Qaeda for years. They've got all kinds of people. I do not believe for a moment that some guy in a cave by himself dreamed it up. I think that he had help over here, and I think that they work with political actors over here. They're not even maybe the political actors, but the people that are over the political actors. And
let's
75% of people are, this is why it's not black and white, 75% of the people that happen to be in maybe positions of some authority or another are not involved. I think it's all very, there are some very, very, very evil people that direct things to move in a certain way, And they're stealing our freedoms an inch at a time until we look down, you know, behind us and, you know, we're 10,000 miles down the road.
Yeah, let me interrupt here, Larry, because it's we do have a different view of this, and that's okay. In fact, I think it's healthy to have a discussion about these things. I do not think that Yahweh views the politician the same way that he views the religious pontificator. I mean, you are correct in that he wants it. So he is opposed to both. And while he speaks out against both, he saves most of his animosity for religious leaders. And that is because a religious leader is far more damaging to the ultimate goal that Yahweh wants, which is for us to come to know him as he is individually and to individually decide to come to know what he is offering, understand what he's offering, and embrace it in terms of the covenant. And so a religious leader is more debilitating than is a political leader, with the exception of the fact that there are countries like the People's Republic of China where the political and the religious are one, where secular humanism is the religion of the land. In such cases, then I think the political leader is dumped right in with the religious leader, and God would view them as equally inappropriate, as equally evil. Beguiling. So I think there is a wrong. Both are wrong. Both are unreliable. God wants us to direct our attention away from both. He wants us to not rely on either, not to trust either. But I think his animosity is greater towards the religious leader than it is the political leader. Second of all.
You know, I happen to think, I don't know if you've ever read the book Vatican Assassins, John Felton.
Mm-hmm.
I think he produces an incredible amount of evidence that the vast majority of these things are ran out of the Vatican. And we all know that Yahusha said, you know, theirs is the seat of Satan when he wrote his Revelation letter. So
you're not going to get any argument from me that the Roman Catholic Church is the single most evil institution in the world today. But we'll continue this conversation after the break. I'm Yada. He's Larry. This is Shattering This. Hello and welcome back to Shattering This. We're having a discussion with Larry on a subject that is actually near and dear to Yahweh's heart. God, throughout his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, spends an equal amount of time presenting the merits of his covenant and the benefits and the blessings associated with those who choose to engage in his covenant, as he does with exposing and condemning human institutions and showing that not only are they not reliable, explaining why he wants us to walk away from them, to be disassociated with these human institutions, and talking about the greed and false teachings that malign them, but also the consequence of us either being beguiled by them or the consequence to those, the penalty, if you will, for those who promote political and religious schemes. So it is a subject that is important to God. Now, Larry and I have a disagreement here, but our disagreement is really fairly modest. And I'm going to share again with everyone the reasons why I don't invest time trying to tie conspiracies together in terms of bad behavior within religious and political institutions.
Hey, Craig, before you do that, can I just point something out very quickly here?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, for those listening, you know, there's a lot of people down on you because you don't, do exactly what you said you don't do.
Right.
What many people out there don't understand is that Yada is not sitting here throwing accolades out here to the government, not believing that they're not capable of evil things, because the truth is he sat down with many of them and has probably forgotten more than most of us know. He's studied this. He was going to write a book on the modern Illuminists at one time.
The history of evil from Babylon to Bush.
Yeah, which is, are you doing that?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Well, you're very well studied in this area, and I just want to point that out to people. So whether or not you happen to think that it was just, 19 Islamists that happened to be trained as pilots over here by our government, and so forth.
Yeah, no, they weren't trained.
Nothing to do with our government. Then that's your business. That's where you come down. I come down on the other side. I think there were people within the government actually helping.
I'm going to mention four things. Larry, I appreciate you making your point. I'm going to state what I was going to state, and I'm going to now address 9/11. First of all, the readily accessible and irrefutable facts that are sufficient to condemn, to expose and condemn political and religious, military and economic institutions are so readily available, so irrefutable, so damning of those institutions that there is no additional value of going behind them to see if they were orchestrated by someone. I wish to do is I wish Americans to stop being patriotic, to stop being political. And I mean more than just Americans, because we have a large audience throughout Europe, also in New Zealand and Australia. I want people today to realize that their government is not trustworthy. I want them to realize that their religious preferences are not trustworthy. I want them to realize that those who are pontificating various economic and military agendas are not trustworthy, and that God wants them to walk away from them. And so sufficient it is to expose the readily accessible and irrefutable facts that prove that point. And so I don't need to go beyond the facts to make the point that your government is not working in your interest. Next is time.
That's right.
If we can spend an equal amount of time trying then to go back and unravel a hidden web between the perpetrators of evil within our government and within religious institutions, or spend that same amount of time studying Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms and making connections there and sharing what God says, what do you think is going to benefit more people?
Oh, it's going to be the Torah, which is what I do, by the way. That's where we don't have any disagreement. None.
All right.
None. I just take it for granted that these people are working not only not for my benefit, but against me. Okay? I mean, that's how I look at it.
Now, for the third issue is I'm going to side with Yah here. Credibility. The moment you become a proponent of conspiracies, you are thrown in with the Alex Jones of the world. I don't want to be in that camp. I don't want to be in that camp. And, there's probably nothing you can do in this world that will cause you to have your character assailed more than exposing and condemning religious and political institutions. It is the thing that causes you to be slandered and smeared and publicly crucified faster than anything else. And since I'm going to be attacked for sharing what Yah said in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, there's no reason I should give people additional ammunition by going on and promoting conspiracies.
That is true. That is true.
Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. Our number is 877-300-7645. We're now going to transition into Yah's testimony. While we have been talking about what God views as important, which is that we come to expose and condemn religious and political, economic and military institutions so that people recognize why it is important that they walk away from them. God's testimony on this system is much better than mine. I do want to preface it, Larry, though, by saying one thing, and that is that...
Sure.
That... while one gets attacked, I'm sure you do, and I do quite frequently, for this propensity to to undermine the credibility of political institutions, religious institutions, military and economic institutions, because people place their faith in these things, because they believe in these things. While you get assailed for doing so, and of course it chips away at one's credibility for doing so, even though you're presenting out that which is true. That amount of criticism, that amount of slander, that chipping away at one's credibility is actually necessary. Because if all that I did, or you did, was to present Yah's teaching without first exposing and condemning the prevalent teachings of man, almost nothing God said would resonate with much of anyone. And that is because we're so jaundiced, we're so poisoned with the with political correctness and with Christianity and with Judaism and with Islam and with Republican and Democratic politics and patriotism. We're so blinded by these things that it's almost impossible for a person, until they're in the position where they're willing to question their politics, they're willing to question their allegiance, they're willing to question their religion. Until you've said something to somebody that says, you know, I think I need to start questioning this, they're just not going to be open to what God has to say. They're going to reject it, even though it's God himself that is the source of the information. And so I do think it's necessary.
Issue has been clouded. I mean, there's more and more people that will, you know, wave a flag, and people that I generally agree with from a, say, a constitutional or a freedom standpoint, and they'll wave a flag which is, you know, just full of Roman,
right,
and God bless America, and you know, and they're going to go
bless
on
our
with
troops.
That. And they're absolutely, well, you know, I've got a son that's special forces. I really do.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Pararescue. There's only 350 of those guys in the world. And he's a shooter. Believe me, he's the shooter you want on your team. If it moves, he can kill it.
Yeah,
but the truth is that.
That's bad.
He's one of the people that thinks that what he's doing is wrong at this point, okay?
He actually does recognize what he's doing is wrong.
Yeah. He recognizes that the military is just basically being used as muscle, like a bastard stepchild, if you will.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
for the elite powers that be. And anyone who doesn't recognize it at this point isn't, you know, paying close attention to recent history.
Yeah. In fact, if you're in Afghanistan, which is the only place where Americans are deployed abroad, where shooting is considered sport. For every fundamentalist Muslim that is killed by a U.S. Serviceman or woman, there are 100 more that are manufactured. So it isn't it is not a productive use of one's energy to be out killing there. And as a matter of fact, in Afghanistan, we made a bad situation worse.
Of course.
The issue isn't the individuals who pull the triggers, although they shouldn't be there. It's those who are pulling the trigger to send them there and their agenda. It was invading a country like that and pushing the fundamentalist Muslims out of that country, which was so backwards, into a country that has nuclear weapons, was suicidal. And so what we're doing there is counterproductive.
That's well stated. I think as Americans, people need to start asking themselves why there's armed drones that are going to be patrolling America.
Well, they already are.
12,000 of them, though. Or
yeah.
12,000 armed drones to watch U.S. citizens while they take the U.S. citizens' right to, you know, protect themselves away. People had better start understanding history repeats itself.
History repeats itself. It's a control mechanism. The ultimate form of power is control. And so by putting drones in the sky over Pakistan and throughout the Middle East and killing people without due process killing even American citizens. Yeah, killing with collateral damage and killing women and children with our drones, thousands of them. So what do you think is going to happen that would prevent the powers that be from killing American citizens in America with these same drones, since they're willing to do it all around the world?
Nothing. Right. Nothing will prevent them.
Right. And so what we're doing is we're allowing our government to chip away at our freedoms. It actually ties to the beginning comments we made in this program, where the reason that our government wants to take our guns away is because it gives them absolute control.
Sure. That's all it's about. Hitler did it. Mao did it. They all did it.
Now, I also want to say this, too, that if you own a gun and you think that that gun is going to protect you, you're wrong. If you're looking for salvation in a gun, you ain't going to find it. There's only one
from 3,000 ways, and Yah was the only way.
That's
it. I mean, you're talking about things that are so out of control. And by the way, even if it came down to shooting, if somebody comes and I know what I'm doing with a weapon, but if somebody comes, you know, a group stacks right up against my door, I'm giving up.
Let me tell you a story.
I'm just going to get myself and my wife killed.
I want to tell you a story, Larry. I'll tell you a story about protection and the only reliable source. There was a fellow, we're going to call him Hez. He lived a long time ago in a community called Jerusalem. Jerusalem, to be more accurate for the day. And old Hez had a problem. He had formed protective alliances with Egypt and with the Hittites and with a number of countries around him because he didn't like having to pay tribute payments to the Assyrians. And so the Assyrians had already come. Yeah, so the Assyrians had come, and they had systematically destroyed every community in Israel, in the northern kingdom. And now they were headed to him, and his last political treaty was with Egypt, and the Egyptians said, hey, we're not on your side anymore. If they attack you, we're not going to back you up. And so here's old Hez. He's got nearly 200,000 Assyrian troops armed with the most sophisticated weapons of the day. And they're headed to Jerusalem, and they're going to besiege and then conquer it. And thus far, every time that the Assyrians had conquered a Jewish community, they had killed the men and led the women and children away in slavery with fish hooks in their noses to humiliate them. This was not a good plight. So what do you think old Hezekiah did? Did he say, you know what I think we need to do now to protect ourselves is let's see if we can build as many weapons as the Assyrians are going to bring to bear against us?
No, he ran to Yahweh, is what he did.
Yeah. Now, how did that happen? What happened here in Hezekiah's case? He stumbled on a copy of the Torah. He says, you know, I'm in really deep trouble, and I somewhere buried in the history of my country is a relationship with God, and maybe that's the only place I'm going to be able to turn. He went to the temple. He found a copy of the Torah that had not been read in hundreds of years. And he read it, and he says, oh, boy, are we in trouble. We have done everything that God told us not to do, and we've done nothing that God's told us to do. And so what he ends up doing,
189,000 of these Assyrians end up dead.
Right. Oh. So what he ends up doing, and to make a long story short, what he ends up doing, he says, you know, this is so compelling. This Torah teaching and guidance is so compelling. It's the way that we will save ourselves is by not trying to save ourselves, but letting Yahweh save us. And he puts his total and complete trust in Yahweh. Now, it's interesting that he wanted, because it was coming up on Pesach, Passover, and he wanted to celebrate it because God invited us to meet with him on this day. And he realized that's an important part of our salvation. But what he found out is they couldn't celebrate it on the right time. And so he went to God and said, listen, our place is such a mess. The temple is full of all this pagan idolatry, and none of the Lowi, the Levite, have a clue what to do. I need some time. Can you give me a couple of weeks? You know, how important is the date of Pesach versus the importance of celebrating Pesach and meeting with you with this right mindset? And God says, no problem. The date's not what's important. What's important is understanding it and relying upon the provision of it. And they started celebrating it while the Assyrians were marching towards them. They were celebrating this party, eating and being merry, dancing, singing in the streets. And as the Assyrians were a week away, old Hez said, hey, this is really fun. They're not building weapons. They're not building their reinforcements against the Syrians. They said, this is so much fun. Let's do it another week. Can we do it another week? Is it okay if we extend this party 14 days instead of the 7 days? Yeah, God said, sure. Let's party together for 14 straight days. They did. And they woke up the next morning, and guess what? 185,000 Syrians are all dead.
Yeah, and that's a historical fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for those who think that their salvation is going to be found in a gun, for those who said, you tried to take my gun away from me, I'm going to revolt. I'm going to kill you. And if you think that your salvation is in a gun, you're misled. If you are one of these patriotic Americans that, you know, supports our troops and says that America's military is providing our freedom, you're wrong. You're just wrong. Our military doesn't provide our freedom. You aren't free because of your military. If it were to go away tomorrow, you would be no less vulnerable than you are today. There is only one reliable source of protection. Yahweh, period. End of conversation. What he did with Hezekiah and that community in Jerusalem, he will do for you. You know, put this in perspective. You know how many death threats I've received, Larry, from having written Prophet of Doom and Tiwa Terrace?
10,000? I don't know. It's got to be outrageous.
Thousands of them. Now, we're going to return to Shattering Myths in a moment and talk about that and Yah's protection. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'd like to begin this segment by sharing Yah's word picture regarding the consequence of misleading. And those who mislead are almost always envisioned by Yah as political and religious leaders, sometimes one and the same. He says, the one who misleads the upright in the way of evil into the pit, he will fall and be cast down. But the innocent will enjoy good, generous, festive, and a beneficial inheritance. Without revelation, people take charge and they run wild. But he is happy, he is blessed, he walks upright on the correct path, who observes and focuses upon the Torah. So what God is telling us is that there is a penalty associated with misleading. And it's he is saying here, too, that you could be an imam in Saudi Arabia, and you, at the end of your life, you're just so lost, so hopeless, that and the people you are fooling are so lost and hopeless that I'm not really going to be all that concerned about an imam in Saudi Arabia misleading the fellow Muslims. Because what he says here is the one who misleads the upright, the straightforward. So if you're misleading someone who otherwise would have had a chance of coming to know Yahweh and understand his covenant, then that religious or political leader is in the crosshairs of God's animosity. And he says that they will be penalized. And it's very different. If you're the victim of a religious or political institution, you simply die at the end of your human existence. But if you are a pontificator of religion and politics, into the pit, he will fall and be cast down. And then he says it's the innocent, those who have been perfected, those who are genuinely unblemished, tamim, who will enjoy a beneficial inheritance. Hey, Larry, are you perfectly innocent?
No, but the path is.
Yeah, yes, and that's really the point here. I'm not perfectly innocent. Right. It's God's Torah that provides the means for us to become tamim, perfect, innocent. And God explains that in the next statement. He says without revelation, without his revelation is what he's talking about here, people will take charge and run wild. And, boy, if you want God's view and conspiracy, there it is. without his revelation, people will take charge and they will run wild. But happy and blessed and walking upright on the correct path is he who focuses on the Torah. When you focus on the Torah, you realize that the path to God, the path to perfection, the path to relationship begins with Pesach, which is the source of eternal life, and goes over the threshold of unleavened bread, which is the means that God uses to perfect us, to remove the fungus of sin from our souls, so that we can enjoy Bikurim, where we are born anew spiritually into his family as his covenant children, and therefore receiving the blessings of Shavuah, which is the promise of seven, whereby we are enriched with his Torah teaching, with his guidance, and we are empowered so that we become so much more than we would have otherwise been. That's the path that leads to God. Its next step is Teruah, which is a harvest where God specifically tells those of us who have met with him on these first four days, these first four invitations, he asks us to shout out a warning to those who are on a different path and to announce the good news that there is a path to God. There is a means to be reconciled with him and engage in a relationship with him. The next day, of course, is the day of reconciliations, where we meet with our spiritual mother. We come into the presence of her light and thereby have every aspect of our relationship with God reconciled. And when that happens, then we enjoy the seventh invitation, the promise. What is the promise? That we get to camp out with God.
Seventh day of rest, Sukkah.
Yeah, we get to camp out with God for all eternity. That's what Sukkah means.
What Shabbat's all about, isn't it?
Correct. Camping out with God. And that's why the Shabbat and Sukkah convey the exact same thing. Now, does that mean that we're going to be idle for all eternity and that we should be idle on the Shabbat? No. What it tells us is that we're going to spend this time with God. We're going to grow with him. We're going to be enriched by him. We're going to be taught by him. We're going to explore with him. We're going to learn from him.
He's going to be known as an individual and welcomed as an individual at that time, right, too.
So happy is he and blessed, walking upright on the correct path. He's the one who observes and focuses on the Torah. Yeah, the Torah, which is teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction. Well, we've run into the end of our program today. Larry, I hope you will join us at this time tomorrow. Tomorrow we have IQ Al-Rasuli, so we'll invert the order of our program. We'll begin with Yahweh's testimony tomorrow and end with a presentation on the foibles of Islam. I am Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.
Registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs understands the importance of supplementing with glucosamine and chondroitin for optimal health and vitality. That's why he recommends